So good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the Clearwater Jazz Holiday Foundation's Young Lion Jazz Master Virtual Session. I thank you so much for joining us today. You should be super excited about what we have to present today. We have a special guest. He's not a surprise guest. He's been with us here at Clearwater Jazz for a while. He's done plenty of different sessions. We have none other than Brandon Robertson. And he's going to be talking. His topic today is constructing harmonic bass lines. We thank you, Brandon, for being with us today. It is such a pleasure. Before we get started, I just want to remind everyone as you come in, you can ask questions here in the chat. We would love for you to interact with us, ask as many questions. I know Professor Robertson will be happy to answer those questions for you. And this is going to be recorded. Please feel free to join in with us. Just to tell you about Brandon's past sessions, here's just a couple of titles. Where do I begin as a professional musician? I know that was a good one. Raise the bar, preparation for performance. How to develop melodic bass lines, tempos and styles. How to develop endurance during a performance. Think like a horn player, a bass perspective. I love that. I'm a horn player. I know that was a great one. Creating new music composition in charts. Practicing for 2 hours a day. How many of us can say that we do that? Know your worth, negotiating the gig. That's so very important. And just to tell a little bit about his bio, I mean, it's a long bio. He's a very accomplished bass player and an educator. But here it is. He's an Emmy nominated music director, professor of upright electric bass composer. He's a music educator originally from none other than Tampa, Florida. Go Bucks. He completed his bachelor's of arts at Florida State University in 2009 and a master's of music and jazz studies in the spring of 2016. Currently, Brandon is the director of jazz studies and director of FGCU, basketball band and Gulf Coast University in Fort Myers. So in 2018, Brandon was nominated for an Emmy Award for Best Documentary for Educational Collegiate Program featuring the FGCU Jazz Ensemble. They are amazing. I hope you've heard them. As a prominent band leader, Brandon has taken his band on multiple national tours, headlining at some of the top jazz venues in the country. Just to add to his impressive resume, Brandon has performed with notable acts such as the world famous, get this, Count Basie Orchestra, led by director Scotty Barnhart. Vocalist Carmen Bradford. I love that performance that I saw you guys in New Orleans. That was amazing. Jason Marcellus, Marcus Roberts, Marty Morrell, and Wyclef Gordon. What an amazing resume. So, and here's the last thing. Brandon, he recently released his first debut album entitled Based on a True Story. And that was fall of 2019. And it reached all the way to number 16 on iTunes top 200 charts. So Brandon, we thank you for being with us today. Oh, thank you so much for showing us. Please support him, support all artists that's here. Let's go ahead and you take it away. Let's go for it, Brandon.
Okay, so first off, I am humbled to have received an introductory from the great Michael. I mean, goodness gracious, thank you so much, the man. And of course, to the Clearwater Jazz Holiday Foundation, I absolutely love you guys and I love what y'all do. And you guys know that anytime y'all ring me, I am here because I definitely like supporting you all. So for today's session, for everyone who's going to be watching this later, I am going to talk about constructing harmonic bass lines. Now, I've covered melodic. Now, there's a difference between harmonic and melodic. So when we're thinking melodic, you're thinking more of actual musical continuity within the structure of the bass line. So your bass lines can almost sound or can be perceived as a melody. But in the most part, the bass player is here to just hold down the foundation under the band. And so harmonically, our job is to make sure that we construct cohesive bass lines that not only outline the changes, but it kind of creates a musical roadmap for the soloist. So in the event, which I have been in plenty of situations like this, in the event that A, there's no pianist on the gig, which I've done this, or B, you're in a rhythm section that might have a weaker player on piano, then you would want to make sure that harmonically, you are outlining the correct changes. Now, I'm going to show everybody this book that I currently have had a lot of my current students here at FGCU purchase. It's a mandatory book that they have to purchase. And it's this book by Stephen Mooney, and it's entitled Constructing Walking Bass Lines in the Blues in 12 Keys. This is an excellent, excellent book. I will provide resources for this for you all that you can look back up later. But this book, this is what we're going to talk about today. Now, in this book, it goes through all 12 keys of the blues. And what I found is that young musicians, particularly young bass players, don't know the blues. I have been to so many different high schools all around the state, done master classes and clinics. And the very first thing I do is I'll invite the rhythm section up to come play for me. I'll say, let me get the rhythm section to come play. Let's do an F blues. You would be surprised how many bass players I've heard that cannot walk an F blues, right? So what I started to think about is, harmonically, what am I listening for? So they're playing a lot of major sevenths on dominant chords. So that was like red flag number one. I was like, okay, we got to correct this. So when you're constructing, the very first thing I want to talk about is what notes are you actually supposed to outline? All right. So if we take an F blues, all right. So we take an F blues, one flat. All right. And if we take an F7 chord, which will be a dominant chord, so we take the four notes in that chord, F, A natural, C natural, E flat, which will be your flat seven, right? So when I tell my bass students, I say to them, I said, now, what scale would this derive from? Now, not that would be the main focus, but it is important to know. So most of my students won't know, they'll just say, well, I've learned a major scale. So I said, okay, you now know about 85% of the information on this chord that you need to outline. So you know that when you saw this chord, it's F7, you're like, well, I know a major scale. So you know F major. And they're like, yeah, well, we know F major. Okay, you know F major, 7. So now when you see this chord, the only note you're going to change or alter is that last note, which is the 7th. You're going to lower it down a half step. That's it. So when you think of a dominant, so every time you see this chord, the letter with a 7, 9, or 13, you see a dominant chord, you're going to know that if you were to play that major scale, you're playing all the notes in the major scale, but you're going to lower that 7th, right? So my beginners, most students are like, okay, I got that, I got that. And then when they start to walk a bass line, they don't know how to properly put it together. So here's a couple of rule of thumbs. I have three different type of ways or approaches that you can use. So the first approach is what I like to call the scalier approach, all right? Where you're kind of walking up the scale, or I should say that you're walking up the notes in that chord. So if we're starting on an F7, you know that there's only four beats in the measure. So you can only play, you know, if you're doing quarter notes, you're only playing four quarter notes at a time. So I can go F, G, A natural, and then I can jump up to the 5th and play C. And then the next measure, which goes to the 4 chord, which would be B flat 7, now I can resolve back down to the root on that chord. So what I like to show students harmonically is you need to diatonically play the right notes within that chord that you're looking at. So a lot of students freak out when they see, F7 sharp 5, F7 flat 9, 13, you know, don't worry about the extensions. Look at the chord, the triad. That's what you need to understand. As a bass player, you need to know that you're outlining the correct triad in that chord that you're reading, right? So you have the stepwise motion or scalar motion. Then you have a triadic motion. That's the second approach. So harmonically, when you have a triadic approach, now you're outlining the triad of that chord. And so when you add in the scalar approach with the triadic approach, it'll look something like this. You can go F for the first measure, F, A natural, C natural, F, G natural, A natural, C natural, then go down to the one, which will be five, one on B flat, five on F, open D, which would be your third, and then one on B flat. So I just did a triadic approach coming back down, but as I was going up my walking line, I was using more of a stepwise motion. And now the third approach is what most teachers would tell their students when all else fails, chromatic, okay? So when you use these chromatic notes in between your diatonic notes to kind of create what we call tension and release, all right? So one of the ways that you can start off with if you're constructing a harmonic bass line is don't be afraid to repeat notes, okay? A lot of times I would like to repeat a lot of different notes to create some tension. And most of the time when I do that, I'm listening for the horn player and where the horn player is going. So if I hear the horn player kind of doing some kind of sequence, then I might repeat some notes to kind of cater off of that, to kind of like have a counter melody happening. Or if I hear that the horn player is playing very high in the higher register of their instrument, or their range, then I might play something really low and play some repeated notes in the lower end to create this tension, this contrast from the high end to the low end. And that just comes from listening to great records. One of my favorite bass players is Leroy Vinegar. And he is what we call he's the king of walking bass lines, because this man can literally take a solo just walking his bass line and it sounds very much like someone soloing. Right. So one of the things that I learned from listening to Leroy Vinegar is he repeats a lot of his bass notes, and the notes that he repeats a lot are tension notes, which are usually the thirds or the sevenths, where the third pretty much indicates the quality of that chord. But the seven, depending on how you use it, if you play a leading tone or over a minor, you're creating this tension that needs to be released. And that was something that I listened for. Paul Chambers is another bass player who does that. And with the second approach, which I was going to state now, is the chromatic notes. And so if you want to listen to someone who is a master of knowing how to use chromaticism in his bass lines, listen to Paul Chambers. The particular records I would recommend for you listening to is any of the prestige records from Miles, the Cooking, Relaxing, Steaming, Working, any of those records that Paul Chambers is playing bass. He does a lot of that stuff on. Another way to create some very harmonic approaches in your bass line is not stopping your line from resolving. So in other words, one of my greatest teachers I studied with was Rodney Jordan, who is the jazz bass professor at Florida State University. And one thing he used to tell me is, he says, you got to look at your bass lines like the Mickey D's Golden Arc or the St. Louis Arc. And you see that there's a shape. So if you start from the bottom, which most of the time, if we're playing at the beginning of a tune, you're going to start with the root, and you're kind of working your way around to this climatic part of your bass lines. And then you want to bring it back home. So your bass lines need to have a shape. In order to do that, you can create these different tensions. So one of the tensions that is used most seldomly is enclosures. So we could take a triadic approach where you would walk a baseline outlining the triad, but you're playing an enclosure, which is you would approach the note a half step above the target note, then you would go below it a half step, and then you will resolve it. So it will go up, down, and then back into the middle. And that's kind of your enclosure. A lot of saxophone players, a lot of horn players use this in like when they're playing sequences. So for bass lines, this is something that actually helps create a lot of tension. And once you build, you can go almost four measures of doing this and you can resolve it. And once you resolve it, it creates this nice palette of, okay, now we have arrived at this point. All right. Another approach that you want to think about when you're constructing your bass lines is how to create harmonic tension. So one of the things that one of my favorite bass players that I like listening to, Richard Davis, who was a very prominent bassist in the mid 60s and 70s, Richard Davis is and Reggie Workman, the two of them are known for playing over the bar line. So what I mean by that is if they're walking on bass line, sometimes they will hit beat four in their bass line and hold that note over one beat. So if you was going 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3. So they would do stuff like that where it'll delay the harmony, but it actually doesn't. It just shifts and then it comes back. And that's a very interesting technique. I don't know if I'm allowed to or not. If one of y'all can give me a thumbs up, if I can demonstrate that on my bass real quick. Is that
I think that would be awesome.
Let me grab my bass real quick.
All right. So to give a much better example
of this,
if you were doing a walking bass line,
doing these different enclosures, that creates this harmonic tension. And what I was describing earlier about playing over the bar, this is where it would have this sort of kind of harmonic delay. So something like, so where if the bass note actually will delay over and it would actually shift the harmony back one beat and then come back. Now this is a very unique and effective trick that most bass players use if they're trying to create more tension in their buildup, especially if they're playing behind a horn player who's really busy. Okay. Another way that you could do it harmonically is tritone substitutions. So if I was playing an F blues, I could start on the F, or I could start on the one chord, go to the fourth chord, go back to the one chord. Now that measure four, I could play a tritone substitution. So a tritone is usually a sharp four, okay, or in this case, if you were thinking about an upper extension, a sharp 11. So in the key of F, the natural four is a B flat. So if I were to raise that note up a half step, now I have a tritone away. So that's the note that I'm referring to. So if I'm looking at a chord as a bass player, if I wanted to create some tension to resolve to that four chord, which would be the B flat seven in measure five, then I can simply
replace that F7 with a tritone, which will be a B7. So instead of playing an F7, I will play it a B7. So something like this. So now you have this, that, which now that B7 is a half step above the resolving chord. So as a bass player, once you start to learn and understand resolution, that was the biggest keyword that my teacher would make me memorize when it came to my bass lines, is your bass lines have to have resolutions. So whatever you walk, however you do it, it has to resolve, okay? Also, we have this thing that some bass players get confused about, young bass players, turnaround. I've been asked that question a lot, more so recently when I've spoken to younger high school students, and a lot of them ask, what is a turnaround? I've heard older musicians say, like, oh, make sure you play the turnaround, and I don't know what a turnaround is. So there's different ways that you can do it. You have 1, 6, 2, 5. You have the 3, and you have the flat 3, and then you have a 2, and then a flat 2. So if I was in the key of C, if I was doing a turnaround, you have another approach where you can go, the Tad Dameron, which would be the 1, minor 3rd, flat 6, and then the flat 2, okay? Or if we're in a regular turnaround, you have 1, 6, 2, 5. Okay, so for you younger bass players, at the end of most songs, like when you're ending the piece, sometimes you'll see a horn player, there's different signals, but the most universal one that I've seen, when cats go like this, I'll see them do this, and usually it's signaling me, excuse me, to do a turnaround. And depend on what key we're in, and depend on what kind of turnaround you want to do, because it's your choice, you can actually predict that. Okay, so I've been in situations where, you know, I've played the blues, and then at the very end, I would just do something like this. So I'll do F minor 3rd right here, what would be the flat 6, or I guess sharp 5. And then you have the flat 2, and then back to 1. Okay. So that along right there at the end of you, so if you were doing the bass line, if we're doing an F, so that's another way to create a quick turnaround. And let me go back earlier, what I was speaking about earlier, since I have my bass with me, talking about repeated notes. So sometimes you could do something like, so playing a repeated note actually gives it a much more bounce. It gives it more depth, more punch. So don't be afraid to repeat notes. Sometimes people think that if you repeat root and fifth, it sounds weird. You can still construct a harmonic bass line doing that as well. And then also, I wanted to address one more important thing about being harmonic. You need to play within the key center. All right, that is very important to know as a young bass player. When you're constructing harmonic bass lines, you want to make sure that you are playing within the key center. All right, use chromatic notes only when you're trying to create tension. Other than that, you need to play within the key center. All right, so if I was playing in the key of F, I'm going to make sure that when I play my 4, I'm going to play a B flat. I'm not going to play B natural, play a B flat. Okay, so just be very mindful of the key center and where your pitches are.
Also, it's very important to know too that if you're going to do any type of sequencing, then you need to make sure, like if you're going to play a sequence, make sure that you are changing the chord at the same time within that sequence. So for instance, if I was doing something like this, so I try to make sure, like, if I'm going to do any type of sequence, if I'm going to repeat that same sequence, then I'm changing with it. I'm playing it within the chord center, and I'm not just playing the same like scale degrees, because they're going to change because each chord change. So just make sure that if you're going to do sequences or patterns or anything, that you are alternating and changing through it. My best advice, and this is the most common question, is how do I create really good harmonic bass lines? Transcribe and listen to any and all great bass players. Leroy Vinegar will always be my first choice when it comes to walking bass lines. Sam Jones, our good friend, I saw a video of him playing the other day with Duke John Lamb. Saw this awesome video of him playing with Duke back in like 1969. It was great. I'm gonna try to see if I can get that video to him, but there's a, of course, Paul Chambers. He's another go-to. Another bass player that a lot of people don't really check out is Larry Grenadier, who plays with Brad Meldow. He is probably one of the most melodic basses and harmonic basses that I've checked out and studied. He's one of my favorite. And if you want to hear some really great harmonic bass playing, listen to Art of the Trio, volumes 1-4 with the Brad Meldow Trio. Art of the Trio, volumes 1-4. Okay. There is also, Israel Crosby's Cross Country Tour, 1958 to 61. I think that's the 61. Israel Crosby is the bass player on there. You want to talk about some harmonic bass lines? I'm going to play in the line for you. And I've done this in one of my previous videos. But the most famous bass melodic or harmonic bass line that was ever recorded that people transcribe the most, it's off of But Not For Me, okay? The jazz standard, But Not For Me. And he starts off the bass line with that chord itself is a C13 chord. So the way he approached it, he starts on the actual 13th. He starts right there on that A, and he goes, so he has 13, 5, 3, 1, 4, 3, 1, 6, 2, 1, 5, 3, 6, 5, 3, 1, 2. Now, I break all that down because when I finally figured out how these bass lines, these harmonic bass lines work, you start to transcribe it. Now you can transcribe it another key. So I started figuring out, like, wow, this is what happens when you have really great harmonic lines. It's so clear, and it's very distinctive. Like, you know exactly what note they chose to play, and they played it with an intent. So I use that song as an example, but that would be another record, the Cross Country Tour by the Ahmad Jamal Trio. And Israel Crosby is the bass player on that. That I would recommend that to any and every single high school bass player. If you want to get going and you want your bass lines to sound hip and jumping, and you want them things to be, what the word y'all use, Liddy, I promise you, check out some Israel Crosby. You won't be disappointed. All right. And so for on that note, everybody, that pretty much wraps up on my end with the
with the construction of the bass lines. Again, I want to reiterate this before we end here. Please, please, everybody, whoever is my bass players that are looking at this, please look at this book. I highly recommend it, Constructing Walking Bass Lines, The Blues in 12 Keys. I have my current bass students working out of this book. They absolutely love it. It has helped a lot of them with understanding how they should approach their bass lines. This is the book. Again, it's by Stephen Mooney. Stephen Mooney, okay? Highly recommend this. So that's a wrap.
Wow. Well, that's a wealth of information that you share with us, Professor Robertson. I have a couple questions.
Sure.
First of all, how does the communication have to be between, say, the bass player and the quartet instrument, maybe the piano or the guitar, you know, when you are switching from doing melodic lines and doing your walking? How tight does that relationship have to be between the bass player and the quartet instrument?
Oh, man, it has to be like, It can't, one can't go without the other. And I was just actually explaining this to my jazz combo in class this earlier this afternoon. And I was telling them that, you know, in the big band, the pianist is supposed to harmonically hold it down. The drummer is supposed to drive, but the bass player is anchoring everything. But when you're in a combo setting, the roles change. Now your role becomes even more important because harmonically and rhythmically, the bass and piano are in sync. They have to be, both players have to be in sync at the same time. And now when you add a guitarist in this, now it even has to be even more in sync because now you have three chordal instruments, three strong instruments that harmonically can function the same. A guitar and a piano are probably way more commonly in terms of the way they approach their sound, because we all know that the piano is a strong instrument. So if you hit the chord, if you hit the actual keys, you're hitting a string, so it's going to create this chordal sound. If you strum a guitar, you're going to get the same thing. You also can get the same thing playing double bass, right? So these three instruments have important roles. Now, here's where, to answer your question, Michael, here's where the differentiation comes in.
If you have a quartet rhythm section, so everybody, what I'm referring to is a pianist, drummer, bassist, and a guitarist, or a vibraphonist, because I've seen vibes be part of the rhythm section as well. So you have this quartet rhythm section. Somebody has to take the leading harmonic role, and then everybody else has to take the rhythmic role. So most of the time, if you're playing something, let's say at a faster tempo, you're gonna get more drive from your guitar player, because they're able to strum a certain way to keep the pulse there. Because the piano player, when you're playing something really fast, if you notice, pianists just kind of get in and out. They're comping, right? But let's say if you slow it down, now the piano player can take that role because now they can fill more space than the guitar player can do in that open amount of time when the tempo is slower. But then let's say that you don't have a guitarist and it's just the bass player and the pianist. Well, then now both bass and piano have to play the roles equally. It's just a matter of, in the context of what's happening in the music, either the drummer is going to spearhead it because they're kind of getting more interactive with the soloist, or the bass player. It goes back and forth. Or I mean, either that drummer, the pianist, or the bass player. It goes back and forth. So to answer your question, yes, they all have to be really in sync with each other. And it is just as important harmonically for them to know what's going on and be on the same page.
Okay. That was an awesome answer. I think we have one more question here. You mentioned great bass players from Ron Carter to Paul Chambers. who would you recommend listening to far as like, who are the up and coming bass players, like younger guys, somebody that's modern that's on the scene right now?
Oh man, there's a bunch of cats. Well, I'll just name some of the guys that like I know personally, like who are my friends, and I know they're out there. One of them is Barry Stevenson. Barry is a dear, dear, really close friend of mine. We went to FSU together. Barry's a Florida boy as well. Lived some time in New Orleans, and he currently lives in New York. Barry has played with everybody: Freddie Cole, Jasmine Horn, Taylor Ixby. I mean, he's played with everybody. He's the same. He's a year younger than me. He just came out with an album called The Iconoclast, which has gotten several huge reviews. He even got a Downbeat review for that, so I'm proud of him for that. Let me see, Cochran Holt, who is the bassist for Kenny Garrett. He's a great friend of mine as well. He has an album that just came out, I think a year and a half ago, called The Mecca. Cochran is also from West Ghana, so his album sounds more like a world music record versus a jazz record. And he's a different type of bass player because he comes from DC, so he has a lot of the go-go music influence in his playing, and it's so prevalent. Like, you could just tell, he's a very strong rhythmic bass player. So Cochran Holt's another cat. Alexander Claffey plays with Kirk Rosenwinkel. He's probably one of my favorite young bassists. He's a young cat out of New York. Also has played with he's played with everybody because he's just there. And Alex is a great cat. Russell Hall is actually another Floridian who is doing huge. He plays with Emmett Cohen and Kyle Poole and their trio. I'm trying to think of, there's so many of them. there's just so many great bass. Oh, Dan Chimmy, man. Yeah, I just met him. Dan is amazing. He's a young case. Dan's like 24. He's a crazy, crazy good bass player. Very melodic bass player. Trying to think who else. There's a lot of cats, man. It's a lot of, there's a lot of cats. Those are ones that just kind of came off top. Amina Scott. Let me not leave out Amina. That is my homegirl for life. Amina plays with Nicholas Payton. She's played with Robert Glasper. She's played with Dee Dee Bridgewater. She's the bassist in the New Orleans Jazz Orchestra. She's the current bassist in the Nojo band. I don't know if you remember, Michael. I don't know if you remember seeing a female bassist playing at the Gen Conference, but that was her. That's Amina. Awesome. Yeah.
And I made mention of that because I know sometimes we always mention the greats. And, you know, I know when we're talking about listening regimens, we have to make sure we go to the standards.
Sure.
And see how this stage was set. But, you know, far as mentioning the new people out there, they're new to some of the younger listeners, but, you know, I wanted to make mention of that because people say, oh, this genre is dying, which we know it's not. There's people all over the world that's doing some amazing things right now this community. So I thank you so much for just giving us all this great information. I want to thank all of our sponsors and everyone who came through. Please check out the studio archives of the past video sessions. You can check them out at clearwaterjazz.com, education outreach section. This was brought to you by Blue Water Wealth Management at Stewart Partners and Duke Energy, as well as our Young Line podcast available wherever you stream. So it's brought by our friends at Merrimax Clearwater. Please continue to support this endeavor from Clearwater Jazz Education Outreach. If you're listening, guess what? There's so much more in store for this week, and there's sessions that's planned out. I'm just going to read out a couple of them. Brandon, you'll probably know a couple of these people. Tomorrow, Wednesday, January 27th, we have John O'Leary. I know you've heard that name before at 4:30.
My man, John.
He's going to be talking about what I love about Earl Hines. And we don't, that's going to be great. We're not going to stop there, though, because on Thursday, I think this is another one of your great friends, Alejandro.
Hey, base family.
4:30. He's going to be talking about what I love about Oscar Pettiford.
That is the man. Yes. Okay. Tell Alejandro you get cool points for me for that one.
So definitely, I think this has been an awesome session. We want to thank everyone for joining us today. And I'm your guest host today, Michael Kernodle. It's been a pleasure, Professor Robertson, my good friend Brandon. Continue to educate and continue to go out there and play. We look forward to some live performances coming up soon. I can't wait till we can get back out there and enjoy this. I think everybody would agree on that.
I'm just put it out there now that I'm going to try to earn me a spot in this festival. If it comes back, I'm going to earn me a spot. Me a spot, man. That's like that. You know, you ever had a bucket list goal? Like I've always had a bucket list goal of mine. It's like, can I play in a festival in my hometown? Like that would be so cool. Just putting it out there in 2021 energy.
Well, I tell you what, you have my vote on that. I would love to see you on that big stage up there, and I would love to see you here in Tampa Bay, where we have the best football team in the NFL going to the Super Bowl. Go Bucks, everyone.
Go Buccaneers. Go Bucks. Buccaneers. We made it. We made it. No more hating on us.
We made it. Thank you, everybody, so much for joining us. Don't forget to continue to tell other people to join us on the next one. We would love to see this room filled up with students, veteran musicians, and just supporters of this great music we call jazz.
Yes, sir.
Have an awesome evening.
All right, guys. Have a good one.
Thank you for listening to Clearwater Jazz Holidays Young Lions Jazz Master Virtual Sessions. Thank you to our friends at MarineMax Clearwater for helping to present this podcast series. To learn more about the Clearwater Jazz Holiday Annual Festival tradition, other special events throughout the year, and our year-round education and outreach, please visit clearwaterjazz.com.